The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I'm joined now, I don't want to say sommelier to the stars, but certainly a sommelier who has worked in some pretty cool places and now at the Seven Stars Bay Resort and Spa in Turks and Caicos. It is Mia Martinson. Mia, thank you so much for being on the pod today.
Thank you for having me. I feel very honored.
No, I loved hearing your story, and we'll get to giant yachts and what you're doing now. But I kind of want to go back to the beginning because I'd love to know how you fell in love with wine. And it wasn't the classic story of someone in a small village in Burgundy or anything like that. You grew up in the island of Gotland in Sweden. I'm sure I mispronounced it, and not exactly a viticultural hub.
Actually, Gotland has two vineyards.
What? Okay, let's start there. Okay, I want to learn now a little bit about the vinification, viticulture of Gotland.
It's not the greatest wines, but like 20 years ago, we had a crazy Finnish guy who moved to Gotland. He started a vineyard and he had some really enthusiastic investors, and they really did a good job. So they did, the sparkling wine was quite decent, but the problem is, similar to Canada, is that we have a monopoly. So you need to go to the state government run places to buy your alcohol. So they were struggling to sell their the item because it was not allowed to sell directly from the vineyard, which is today allowed. They just open it because we have 38 wineries in Sweden. So it's getting up there, but it still have a long way to walk. But there is some incredible people who's doing some amazing work and getting wineries and Sweden known a little bit more for sparkling and white wine, I would say.
Okay, now I've got to ask a follow-up question. I did not expect to do the Swedish wine scene. So I wonder, just in terms of the temperature, I'm not sure what the average temperature is there versus Niagara or the average amount of sun, where we can now do Cab Franc. We can even do Cabernet Sauvignon in very specific, you know, a small little sub-appellations here, and they actually will be fully developed. But what does, so what does Sweden do? You said sparkling. What would be some of the other varietals
mainly,
that Sweden
mainly sparkling. To be honest with you, Sweden, as always, since we also have the interconnection with ice hockey, Sweden has always loved Canada and seen it as a big brother. So they did a lot of studying with Canada and what you started with. And what worked, because we're very similar in terms of that. So most of the vineyards are placed in the middle part of Sweden. And thanks to global warming, we are now getting longer and more warmer summers, longer, warmer autumns. So it helps a lot with, obviously, with the grape growing. Most of the land is virgin soil, so you have nothing. But there's still a lot of trials and errors in terms of what works and what doesn't work. So there are some sweet wines similar to what Canada had in the beginning. You had huge success with your ice wine. And that kind of also worked for Sweden. And also, again, they were studying on the program from Canada at that point, what would work and what didn't work. So it's actually, they did a big tasting with the Decanter magazine, did a big tasting in Sweden where they compared some of the Swedish wines versus the other known wines, and Sweden did pretty good, and it was all done blindly. So it's overall, it's been a very interesting wine scene.
Now I got to go down a rabbit hole and find some Swedish Pinot or Gamay. I'll get back to the original question. I'd love to hear how you first fell in love with wine.
So I started to become a chef, was way too social to ever fit into the back of the house. So I ended up in the front of the house, thanks to a very good mentor. My first job at the age of 17, I ended up working in a very famous castle down in the south of Sweden, where Björn Borg got married with one of his wives. And, you know, it was jet settings and helicopters coming in and going. The gentleman who owned this castle had an amazing wine cellar. and very old traditional wine cellar. And in those days, Sweden was a very big importer of Spanish wines. And that kind of Faustini the Fifth was kind of like my first introduction into wine. And it kind of escalated from there.
So the big sort of Tempranillos is what started to started you down the road then. I'd love to hear, because you did it before I did, what were your memories of your wine education, of getting your sommelier degrees? I always love hearing stories of success, and I can't believe I called that grape that grape. I'm just curious, what are some of your memories from your wine education?
I graduated in 1999 from WSET. And in those days, WSET was the only thing that was available to us in the restaurant industry. But Sweden took it to the next level. So you had to be working a minimum of 5 years to even be accepted into the sommelier school. It was all about protecting the professional. You did everything orally in terms of tasting, blind tasting. You worked with the chefs. You worked with all different beverages. So everything from water, tea, coffee, chocolate, cigars, to any kind of beverage that you thought about. You did psychology classes, you did acting classes, you did all of it, because it was all about how you walked the room when you worked in the restaurant, how you approached your guests, how do you get to know them in 10 seconds. You know, you never met this person before. How do you ask the right questions to understand what do they enjoy drinking and what do they enjoy spending? You know, it was all of that. So it was a great school back in those days. Today is very different because the world also changed a lot on how we deal with wine, since big supermarkets can now buy wine and sell wine. So you needed buyers for that side. And there's a huge differentiation. So what the WSET was once upon a time, they changed into a different market today, where the Master Sommelier program picked up. And they also all focus on what's going on the floor. So it's kind of interacted in that way. But sommelier school for me was one of the best times in my life. And still my friends that I got to know then, we are still friends today. We all interacted and worked together in some way. We were all good. And those were the days where you actually went to school. Nothing was done online. And I think that was part of the success for most of us.
Part of becoming a SOM, and I did my WSET diploma, but I did it in 2013. So it didn't have the same intensive level as what you had to do in 99 in Sweden. It kind of reminds me of, to get your driver's license in Germany is so much more intensive than it is here in Canada. And hearing your stories about going to psychology classes and working in restaurants, that's really fascinating. But also, to your point, to become a SOM, to get good at it, you need a community. You can't do that on your own.
No, not at all. And also, again, you needed to work as a waitress and a waiter to understand the rhythm of the restaurant.
Yeah, no,
which is also interlinking with, you know, understanding the food, but also understanding the psychic of everything else. You work very practical in the dining room. How do you feel comfortable standing in front of strangers decanting a bottle of wine for $35,000? You know, it's all about, you know, because you go on stage. Every day you go on stage, and that's where you need to make sure that you have the stage presence and learn how to walk the room and own it.
It's a hard job if you are an introvert or if you're shy. It's funny. My background is actually, I have a theater degree. It comes up almost every day when, if I do a wine event or my normal job, hosting a radio show, having theater, having improv, yes, and being comfortable in different situations is massive. Now I've got so many other follow-up questions, but we'll go here. I need to know first, what was it like being the head SOM? And I didn't even know about this. It was called The World, which was like the largest private residential yacht. I spent half an hour on the website yesterday, and I got to tell you, damn, that is not a bad way to spend a month. But what was it like? What was it like being the SOM on there? Because that must have been a completely different experience than working in restaurants in Sweden.
I ended up on The World by fluke, actually. So I lived in South Africa for many years before that, and of various reasons in the political situation, it was time to leave, and I was heartbroken for it. So I was, in all honesty, drunk and sent my CV to the wrong headhunter in London, and ended up the next morning getting an email from him saying, "Yeah, I got the best job here at the ocean for you." It's like, no, I don't want to go to the ocean. I was looking for land job. And ended up interviewing for the world, six different interviews with them actually. And I had no idea. And I was quite old when I got into the business there, which I think was a blessing. Ended up working 6.5 years traveling around the world with them. So the world's largest privately owned mega yacht with 165 apartments on board. And the owners own their own apartments. They can't rent it out. There's no rental program on it. They can obviously invite family and friends coming to sail with them, but they literally never have the same route ever. So it's based on where the expedition is. So whether the expedition is Ross Sea or in Antarctica, or it's Papua New Guinea, or it is the White Sea, Russia, that's how the route around the world is set for the year.
First question, what was the most stressful moment with you opening up some crazy first growth and there's massive waves going on and you're trying to make sure that bottle doesn't break?
Yeah, it's very interesting that I was I got seasick in a bathtub and I ended up working on this one.
Hold on,
But
wait, can I interrupt? Did you lie in any one of your six interviews about the fact that you get seasick and you're going to go work on a yacht?
no, they never asked me that question, funny enough. But you learn quite quickly. You learn on the job how to do it, but the hard part is when you're standing on deck 8 and you're trying to open a bottle of wine, and it depends on how the boat is rolling, if you're going forward and backwards or you're going sideways. So it's almost like I had very good muscles in my legs because you kind of balance yourself up at the same time, trying to open and trying to pour. And then it's a little bit like dinner for one. At the end, have you ever seen that movie, Dinner for One,
No.
with the old butler and the old lady? It's one of the most classic old school movies comedy that you can see, only shown apparently in Sweden and Germany for New Year's. But this butler, he gets drunker and drunker because everybody's dead at the table. It's only him and the lady still alive. And he has to impersonate every person who's ever sat at the table and drink at the same time. And he literally gets so drunk. And in the end, not that I was drunk serving, but you felt like him because you're running and then you're kind of literally like throwing wines into the glasses if you're not careful. The captain and the navigation officer were quite good on kind of steering the ship that we wouldn't go through too much of a rough waters. So we were blessed in those ways. But yeah, the only thing I would say is the rough part is that when you're at sea, we have 20,000 bottles on board the ship, right? 1,500 SKUs. And the issue is more that put pressure on you as a buyer because you need to know where everything comes from. Because when you're at sea and it's rolling, it's maturing the wines quicker.
Oh, I never even thought about that.
Yeah, so you need to make sure that you know where your Bordeaux and everything is coming from and where you're buying it from, because you don't want it to have been sitting on a container around the world a couple of laps before it ends up on your ship. So that's why we mainly bought everything direct, wherever we were going in with the ship, whether we were loading in Bordeaux, directly in Bordeaux city center, which we did a couple of times. And then obviously Australia, New Zealand, Tasmania, Chile, Argentina, South Africa, wherever you're going, you kind of make sure that you load directly, and that's a different experience in bottle.
By the way, I just have this image of you asking the captain if we have, let me know, if we have choppy weather and it's high waves, Beaujolais Nouveau, calm night, Premier, we'll get the Grand Cru Burgundy out, no worries at all. It's a Chambertin for everyone. Okay, one
Yeah,
more.
and some of the residents had their own wine cabinets on board, and we went through a very rough patch. There was a storm that just came out of nowhere, and one of the wine cabinets tilted over, and luckily it hit something else. So it was like a plucky pin, and not one single bottle broke, and it was all first growth in it. And it's like it's the sweatiest moment, I must admit, because you're literally trying to pick things and you don't know if something has broken or whatever. But yeah, it was
Oh, that would be. Also, one other one, then we'll get to Turks and Caicos. I'm loving this. It's like, I have like 100 questions. We won't have time for any of them now. Did you ever pair with where you were going to be? Like if you were in Antarctica, then maybe the wines would be different than if you were in the Philippines. Like, did that ever come up when it came to any meals?
Absolutely. So we did everything destination, right? So we brought the destination alive wherever we were going. So if we were in Australia, which we were pretty much every 3 years, you would go into Australia, depending on how that route we're going. So we normally bought wine directly from Australia every 3 years. I wasn't buying it anywhere else because the pricing is so vastly different because of Australia being so far away. The same thing with New Zealand wine. So then we brought all the produce because the chefs are all buying locally as well, right? So then you brought everything and we brought guest chefs on board, or we did wine dinners with local wine makers wherever we were in the world. So you kind of brought everything. So while we were Australia or New Zealand, people were just drinking these kind of wines because they got like the best wines at the best pricing. By the time you were leaving, they drank enough that it was kind of alleviating the vessel going up a little bit to be able to have wine to plan it. So it kind of lasted us until we came back around the world in that way again. So we were trying to be, do everything as much as we could in terms of bringing the destination live for each place that we're going to.
Oh, that would be cool. All right, let's jump ahead. How do you go from the largest private giant yacht to the work now at the Seven Stars Bay Resort and Spa in Turks and Caicos?
The CEO here, he has friends on board, so they came on board to sail, and we became friends. And when I decided after 6.5 years that it was time to go home, I was quite tired and I just wanted to go home to my mom and eat sponge cake and sleep on her couch for a while. He then reached out and said, listen, we need help with the beverage program in Turks and Caicos, and would you be interested? And then we started to look at the project, and it was a very interesting project because in 2018, we had only one importer on island, and mainly everything was North American wines, and we had a smaller importer who did a little bit of European wines, but not very much. So each resort on the whole island had the same wine list, and the owners were starting to get very bored. And it was quite expensive for what it was. So I came in and they wanted to build a proper wine cellar, proper wine storage. So I helped them to design and build a wine room where we did a chef's table inside. So we have a tasting menu with me and the chef hosting the evening. So you can be 2 people or 10 people. It's a 5-course tasting. You are surrounded with all these wines around the world. And you have a private dinner in there. We also extended on the property from 2 restaurants. Today we have 4 restaurants, so the wine program has expanded on that as well. I do a lot with Coravan, a lot of wines by the glass, both still wine and sparkling wine, because we can now, thanks to the Coravan preservatives or preserve system. And we went from 30 SKUs. Today we have 620. I did a lot of my own import because in the beginning there was nothing. So I started to import more grower champagnes from Champagne that I worked with over the years. I just actually got a loading this morning from Pierre Jumonet and Cuy in Côte Blanc that I do as our house wine or house champagne. I did some Burgundy and some Châteauneuf-du-Pape, some Bordeaux, and then we started to expand on that. Then all of a sudden we started to get more importers on island. So today we have 5, and they all specialize in different segments and different kind of imports and different kind of approach to the market. And that allows us to have much more and much better producers. I also been very blessed that many of them asked for the advice where to import. So we work with a lot of guys, everything from Chile, Argentina to South Africa today. Obviously, a lot of Burgundy, Champagne, and Châteauneuf-du-Pape is big. Italy, obviously, is also big. Spain is getting there. The only thing that is limping a little bit is Germany. But it's to get people to drink Riesling today, it's really hard. My goal for 2027 is to get people to drink more Riesling.
The hilarious thing about that is that lament is with Psalms around the world. It's a constant conversation. I'll just say it again, anyone listening, don't be afraid of residual sugar. Good wine producers and winemakers, they use that residual sugar and make an incredible wine. Stop being afraid of Riesling. And Riesling would be great. Nice, crisp, dry Riesling at Turks and Caicos would be so good. I've got a serious question, but I have to go back for 1 second. What would you pair with sponge cake?
Champagne goes with everything.
Okay, no, I'm not going to allow it. That's too easy. Because you're right. Champagne goes with barbecue. You can have champagne with good ribs from Louisiana. You, for some reason, there's no champagne around, which I'm sure has never come up in your world in decades. But you can't have champagne. Your second favorite thing to have with sponge cake when you're hanging out at your parents' place.
Dr. Luce and Spätlese.
Hell yeah. Oh, yeah. My God. Yes. You know what? That one tickles me. I love Dr. Lucent. Also, anyone, go visit Dr. Lucent. It's a beautiful sight.
He's a funny character. He's the only one who told me, oh, we are so drunk now, we need to go in the cellar to drink ourselves sober with some Riesling.
So true. It is the wine of breakfast. Mia, how much pride do you take when you now look at the wine program, at the wine lists, at this where you're working, at this resort, when you think about where it is now versus when you first joined?
It's tremendous, to be honest with you. Also, again, that we now have a lot of followers from other resorts guests that comes in, because we have by far the best cellar on island, and also very fairly priced, because I'm importing a lot of things on my own, which means that I'm cutting out so many middle hands, because Turks and Caicos is one of the most expensive islands there is. It's up there with St. Barts and the rest of it. And we pay 50% tax and duties on absolutely everything, whether it's a toothpick or a DRC. We pay the exact same amount for everything. So the problem is that the cheap wine becomes too expensive, where the more expensive or middle range wines can kind of uptake that a little bit more. So I want to sell wine, so I don't want to upcharge in anything. We want to sell wine and we want people to enjoy wine. And that's the motto around it. And we're trying to do different things, talking about champagne. Tomorrow I'm opening the Flight Club again. So on Wednesdays here in Turks and Caicos, it's a little bit of a slow day for us in the bar. So we don't have a wine bar in Turks and Caicos. So I decided to do like a wine bar on Wednesdays. And what is the club that you shouldn't talk about? It's the Fight Club. So it became the Flight Club. So... we do different themes every month. And the first month of May, we are doing fried chicken and champagne. So you can do come in and have different flights of champagne across the board and have it with either classic chicken, fried chicken, or spicy fried chicken, and just enjoy it for a reasonable amount of money. And then to celebrate the wine even more is, and to celebrate all our fantastic importers that we have on the island. 3 years ago, I started a wine fair or a wine festival called the Uncorked, which happens every Thursday before Thanksgiving. It's all the five importers coming with their top producers, and they pour almost 250 different wines. It's like a trade show in the normal world, but here we don't have that. Live music and the chefs are just putting on the barbecues and everything else. And we have about 300 guests coming into our farm, which is one of our restaurants here, where it's just a celebration of food and wine and people for a few hours. And that has become very successful.
My God, you have this like high-end, beautiful wine trade show right by the water. That's that's not a bad way of spending a day. By the way, the third rule of Flight Club is you will drink Spätlese and you will enjoy it.
I'm actually going to take you up on that.
Yeah. Rule number three. If this is your, because in the movie, if this is your first time at Fight Club, you got to fight. If this is your first Flight Club, here is some Spätlese. You will thank me later. Going back to your training in 1999, there's one thing you said that stuck out for me. Taking, you know, some psychology classes. For people listening that are trying to get into the wine world, who want to be sommeliers, what are some of the lessons that you learned then that you still use now?
Listen to the guest and ask the right questions. I think that we don't listen to our guests. Sometimes we just reply to reply. We don't really listen into what listening into what the guest actually is asking for, but it's also right, asking the right questions. So, you know, what do you enjoy drinking? What is your favorite part of the world to drink from? And if they would say Spain and Albariño, maybe you can then think about, do you want to try a dry Riesling from Germany? Or, you know, you like it more aromatic, or you want to go somewhere else in the world, or maybe you want to try something from South Africa. You know, you have a little bit of a better spectrum. And if they like Albariño, they most probably don't want to drop the Montrachet pricing on a wine, which is, again, listening into what the guest is actually saying. And also, again, it's about winning the trust. It's not to make the biggest sale for the first time. It's about building up a trust with your guest. And if they really enjoy what you serve them the first time, they will always remember that. So they will come in and ask for the second time. And they maybe want to go a little bit higher and explore a little bit more. And then the third time, they will say, you choose, you know what we like. And that's the win-win concept that you want to do as a sommelier. That's how you actually make the big sales. It's the return sales.
Well, because it's about trust. I remember one of my favorite somms, one of my favorite wine bars, you know, one of the first times, you know, I was like, you know, you let me know what you think is great. And he knows what my budget is. He knows I spend money on wine because I don't have children and I don't care about technology. And he just brought like a funky, cool Northern Italian wine. I had never tried the grape and didn't know the producer. And it was like $95. And I respected the hell out of it because he knew me well enough. I was like, I'm not here to gouge you. I'm here to educate, entertain, and also to win your trust.
And that's exactly it. And this is also coming back to Flight Club. That's kind of what we're trying to do is, you know, we will do obscure grapes because many times people don't have the courage to order a bottle of it. So we arrive and then we will do it at Flight Club together with food. So they get a better understanding and the DNA because food and wine always links together. Whether you are in the Loire Valley or in Germany or you're in Italy, the food and the wine always interlink with each other, and that can be a greater experience than anything else. And like at the moment, I'm a big fan of anything white, Sicilian whites. And they're very inexpensive, but it's like the Chablis of the south of Italy. Pure, fresh, minerality, explosive, but without crashing your budget. So it's a great way of getting to learn something new, which is fantastic. So it doesn't always have to be the most, but it's listening. I think listening is the key thing, and to ask the right questions, how the guests will do.
I read that early on when you started this journey, your parents weren't really into wine. How much have you upped their palate since you went down this path?
They have invested in 2 wine fridges.
So you've hurt their wallet and their waistline with your passion, haven't you?
I just say that they have more fun now than before. My dad is a very good constructor. He likes to build things. So every house he's building now, he's looking into where he can fit the wine fridge in because he thinks this is an essential adjustment. Because we grew up with no wine because we grew up in a very religious home from my grandparents' side. And wine was never talked about. I was the first one ever get educated into wine. They are huge drinkers of Riesling. They love Riesling and Grüne Veltliner from Austria. But we also have a cuisine similar to Canada that leans itself into that. And the island Gotland, where I'm from, we are huge known for asparagus, carrots, potatoes, anything fresh, primeur, salmon, cod, all of the great things that you can do with Riesling. So it kind of leans in. And also Alsace, like the Pinot Gris and the Gewürztraminer and things like that as well. So they're big fans of that. Not the sweet stuff. They like more the drier stuff. And that's also, and they really got into champagne, which is also quite nice. So yeah, I'm very fortunate. Both my siblings married good people who likes to eat and drink. So that's what we tend to do when we get together.
Yeah, well, your siblings' partners, they must love having you as a sister-in-law as well. As we end this, just if people, and yeah, Turks and Caicos, you mentioned, it is expensive, but anyone knows that. If someone's going to go there, anniversary, honeymoon, 40th birthday, 50th birthday, whatever, what would you tell them about the area and about what your work, where you're working right now? If they're thinking of going to that area, why they should come by your neck of the woods beyond Flight Club, which everyone should do.
Seven Stars Resorts is one of the first resorts that came up on the island, and we are directly on the Seven Star on the Grace Bay Beach, which is one of the most beautiful beaches on earth. It's white, it's pristine, is white sand everywhere. So when you go out on the boat, the colors of the water is just, you cannot believe it. You can't take pictures to justify how beautiful it is. It's a very slow island in terms of that everything is island time here. That's a good thing because we all come from very busy backgrounds and we're all stressing around in our normal life. So here you're only allowed to snooze in your sunbeds and enjoy the beach, enjoy your drinks and your wines, take a canoe ride or a paddleboard and enjoy the water. You will come in for good dinner. You eat very well everywhere here, whether you are at the farm, which is our hydroponic farming that we do. We were the first one on island, where it's more farm-to-table kind of thing. And then you have Seven, which is our fine dining restaurant. And then you have the deck, which is directly on the beach on Grace Bay, one of the most beautiful settings to see the sunset, or Terrace, which is our more upmarket sports bar that we have. But it's a beautiful, and we're not very high buildings, and we have a lot of returning guests because they feel very at home, which I think is the most important thing.
Absolutely. Mia, this has been a delight. I think we could do it again and just hear more tales of being on the high seas and again, the growth of your wine program there. And then the two of us could just sit and bitch at people for not drinking more Riesling. It would be fun.
100%.
But Mia, I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for coming on the pod.
Oh, thank you for having me. Pleasure to meet you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.